Faisal Al-Azem, thank you for joining me.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
I understand you recently sent a container of goods to the Syrians in need. What all did you collect?
Well, that's an activity that's been taking on for a long time, for 3-4 years. And in majority, it's winter clothes. So there has been a lot of emphasis on winter clothes towards a lot of the refugee camps, particularly around Turkey and Lebanon. The big problem that we're facing is that, unfortunately, the UN's appeal of 2014 hasn't been met to address the Syrian refugee crisis, which was $4 billion approximately, and only 57 was met. And as a consequence, a lot of supplies, whether it's food or shelter or tents or winter clothes, etc., have not been provided. And we're in a situation where you have 4 million Syrians that are externally displaced, 7 million internally displaced that are in dire need of daily humanitarian aid and attention. So as much as the UN is doing, unfortunately, it's not enough. And that's why these private initiatives are so crucial.
And we saw that it's a particularly harsh winter this year there, much like it has been here in Canada.
It was a very difficult winter. And unfortunately, there has been some losses in some areas, particularly around Lebanon. Mobilization, whether it's the Syrian diaspora or even Canadians that empathize with this humanitarian crisis, is crucial. We shouldn't be in a state of mind that someone else will take care of this crisis, or the UN or the UNHCR or UNICEF. No, they want, they are doing what they can, but it's not enough. And that's why these private initiatives are so crucial. And I invite anyone that you know empathizes with this crisis to reach out to the Syrian Canadian Council or other Syrian organizations to get involved and help.
So you've been sending containers to the various refugee camps and inside Syria as well?
Myself, I haven't. I know that others, particularly in Vancouver, they've been involved in getting inside medical aid. And in Toronto as well, and Ottawa. Myself, I haven't been involved in sending inside Syria, just in refugee camps in Turkey and Lebanon, but there has been initiatives by the diaspora to send medical aid inside Syria, yes.
Yeah, you mentioned the diaspora. I imagine the same work is being done by other Syrian communities around the world.
Absolutely, and actually in my last visit last year, I visited the Syrian-Turkish border. And I was talking to the people there and asking them, how are you guys surviving? It's incredible in these conditions. And his answer was, you know, has really shook me. And I still remember the words. And their answer was, we're surviving because of the Syrian diaspora and because of you guys that are outside. If that support wasn't there and that channel wasn't open from Canada and the U.S. and France and the U.K., et cetera, we wouldn't have made it these last 3-4 years. And it echoes a lot because it tells you that the big NGOs that should be on the forefront are unfortunately not doing enough. And hence the importance of all these private initiatives and that grassroots activism that we're seeing.
Now, the Canadian government agreed to welcome or to allow 10,000 Syrian refugees to come to Canada. But I understand it's up to the Syrian Canadian community to sponsor these families. Mm-hmm. What's involved in this? What must you do?
Yeah, it's a pretty complex process. So what we know so far is that 10,000 spots are going to be dedicated for Syrian refugees, roughly 4,000 government resettled, so those are usually UNHCR referred, and 6,000 are going to be the responsibility of Canadian citizens, so it has been pushed to the private sector. And the way it works, it depends on where you are, but in general, it happens through what is called sponsorship agreement holders, which are organizations that have an entente with the federal government that allows them to privately sponsor refugees. So as an example, a concrete example, if I would want to sponsor a family of four in Egypt, I could go to a sponsorship agreement holder, which are usually community or church groups, sign an agreement with them, and it would take an average 40 months from the day I signed with them until that refugee arrives into Canada.
Did you say 40 or 14?
40.
40?
Yes, 40 months. It's a very, very long delay, and this has been a huge source of frustration as well for the community here. Actually, in July of 2013, Ministry Kenny announced, before Minister Alexander took over, that 1,100 were going to be privately sponsored and resettled into Canada until the end of 2014. But in November 2014, when we looked at the number, only 163 were there from 1,100. And then you understood that there is a real problem with this program, particularly in terms of delays. And that's why we're not seeing a lot of Syrian refugees arrive into Canada, because the majority has been pushed to the private sector, and it has a lot of issues, including these long delays that we talked about. Other issues are that you can't privately sponsor someone internally displaced in Syria, so he has to be outside of Syria. There are as well issues in sponsoring refugees from Turkey. None of the sponsorship agreement holders are sponsoring from Turkey.
Why is that?
Well, we talk to the Turkish side and the Canadian side, and basically it seems that there is a bureaucratic problem. The Canadian side says that the Turkish side is not allowing exit visas to Syrian refugees, and when we speak to the Turks, they say, no, not at all. It's a huge burden on us, and we encourage resettlement of Syrian refugees. So it seems that, you know, there is a bureaucratic miscommunication. We're trying to get them together to solve this problem, because today Turkey hosts the largest Syrian refugee population in the world, 1.6 million, and a lot of them are families of Syrian Canadians. So in a nutshell, those are a couple of the obstacles that we've been facing. Another one as well is the financial aspect, is that generally sponsorship agreement holders have their own rules, but the way they function is that they ask you to leave a deposit of money, which in general is equivalent to the welfare amount. So a family of four, to sponsor them, you would leave a deposit of nearly $20,000 from the day you sign the contract with them, and that money is returned to you because you're supposed to sponsor the family for an entire year, and that money is returned to you when the refugee arrives into Canada. So who is the average Joe that can just forget about $20,000?
Yeah, come up with $20,000.
Yeah, 40 months, and then when the refugees arrive, are given back to them. So the combination of all these obstacles have made this program not very attractive. And of course, the question is asked, is it something that government officials have thought of before throwing the majority of resettlements of the private sector, thinking that, you know, maybe that's the hardest way to get Syrians here, so let's push everything on the private sector. You know, those are things that are, of course, being talked about in the community.
Are you doing anything? Are you organizing to clarify things? Are you going to work through the election to make it an issue?
I mean, we've been doing a lot of lobbying, particularly on this file, because I think it has become the primary source of anxiety and anguish for Syrian Canadians. And it's very simple. Their families are stuck in this prison called Syria that's being torn apart. And even when they are making it to the neighboring countries, the burden of Syrian refugees has become so big on these neighboring countries that is being reflected very negatively on Syrian refugees. An example, Lebanon, with a population of 4 million, you have over 1 million refugees. So that's one out of four. It's unheard of almost in any country where one of the four inhabitants are refugees. And their families are suffering as a consequence, you know, whether it's from xenophobia, discrimination, exploitation towards particularly women and children. And so we've been getting a lot of pressure to do something about that. And we've been involved in the last 3 years to push the government to facilitate family reunification, increase the number of Syrian refugees, allow people that are in danger here as well to apply for asylum, etc. And it's a long road. So each time a program opens up, we get excited because it's an opportunity to protect Syrian families, particular families of Syrian Canadians. But then we realize the obstacles that are, you know, they say the devil is in the details.
Mm-hmm.
You realize all the obstacles that are there in this bureaucracy.
Are you getting any help from the larger Arab Canadian community?
Well, to some extent, I would say yes. But in general, I'm very sad to say that politics has drawn a large cloud on the humanitarian crisis in Syria. And this is very shameful because whenever you talk to people about Syria, they're influenced by the media. So what comes to mind is ISIS or Assad or chemical weapons or Russia, the UN Security Council, Hezbollah, etc. And behind all these media titles, there is the largest refugee crisis since the creation of the UN, one of the largest population displacement and humanitarian crises that we've seen. And as a consequence, people decide to get engaged or not in Syria based on their own political preferences. And this is dangerous because what happens is that you turn your back away from the suffering of millions and millions of people. This has been a real issue, is that decoupling the political aspect of this crisis with the humanitarian crisis.
And all the while, I imagine Syrian Canadians can't go back to visit their homeland at this point.
This has been a huge issue for everyone. You know, it takes for you a status that, for example, the government doesn't like on your Twitter account or on your Facebook to be banned. So it's that simple. And the more you're active and the more there are risks, whether it's on you or on your family. So it hasn't been hard. Actually, I've even seen cases of people getting sick here because of anxiety and stress, because they have families that are stuck there. Some people have lost loved ones there and could not make the trip to even bury them because they had a feeling that they were at risk going back to Syria. Tremendous, tremendous stress and very bad state of mind that Syrian Canadians are going through, and Syrians all over the world, unfortunately, right now.
Tell me about the 163 refugees who have made it through this maze of bureaucracy. Where have they settled?
Well, in general, from the sense I'm getting, they're spread between Montreal, Calgary, a bit of Vancouver, Sherbrooke City, Quebec. So it seems that it's all, and Saskatchewan as well. It seems that it's all over Canada. And in general, the churches have played a major role in their resettlement. It has its positives and its negatives. Some of them have been fantastic. Like here in Montreal, I've dealt with an organization called Action Refugiés that have helped Syrians from different ethnicities and sects. However, there has been issues and some complaints by the community where some sponsorship agreement holders restrict their resettlements to their own sectarian or ethnic preferences. And this is problematic because you start shutting doors on people and on desperate people that need to resettle their families. So we've seen examples where Syrian Canadians were turned away by some of these sponsorship agreement holders because they didn't meet their own sectarian or ethnic criteria. So this has been as well another obstacle and something problematic in the community.
Well, Faisal, thank you for telling me about it.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. And I'm very happy that the media is still talking about Syria. We need this attention and we need people really to mobilize because it has taken such an epic proportion that even governments, and whether it's in the West or regionally, they are not able to cope. So we need everyone involved.
Well, we'll be following the story.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.